Do you want to listen to Adventist World Radio SID Media but struggle with data? Don't worry. Get yourself the Hope Channel Africa decoder and switch to the Radio Bouquet to listen to your favorite Christian radio station. Contact us on +27 73 470 3520 or visit www.sidmedia.org to place your order.
Oh, okay, so last week there was a conversation we started and we could not complete it, and I promised you that we are going to do that today. Prophecy today. Guys, a lot is happening in the world. You know, there's so many things that I need to tell you about and there is not enough time. There just is not enough time. There is so much. Yo, I know. Hopefully we'll be able to cover it all by the end of this year. But for now, ne? The debate continues, guys. The debate continues about Iran. That it is the first of some major religious wars, perhaps. And then, I don't know if you have heard about black Jews. There's also the black Jews. As if you have heard about them. The black Jews, if you've seen, there are people in America, has a shame because they don't hold out. They will tell you, I'm a Jew. And maybe they've got a point. Guess, Anna, even amongst white people, there is a contestation about who the real Jews are. Let's listen to this. The professor, a respected man, is going to share, okay, on Iran, and then he's going to tell us about the Jews. Aye, that part, I know, it ate me up. I put it all together so that the context makes sense. Ne? Remember, we played the first part last week, so this is just a continuation. Lalel.
28, Bertia made his entrance into Rome, abolished the papal government, and established a secular one, Encyclopedia Americana. So secularism, humanism, all of those isms which exclude God out of their political arenas, take over. Now, I'm fascinated by history. The one who actually did this was Napoleon. And just by a little quirk of, shall we say, divine intervention, he actually was also the literal king of the south, because he had conquered Egypt. He had entered into Egypt. And I'm fascinated to see that Freemasonry has something interesting to say about this, and so that we make sure we use the right sources, we use them. Freemasonry's web pages itself, the Grand Lodge of the British Columbia and Yukon, and they claim over here the evidence in favor of a Masonic initiation previous to Napoleon's assumption of the imperial title is overwhelming. The initiation took place in the body of an Army Philadelph Lodge of the Icosias, primitive rite of Narbonne, the third initiation of Ecole Communique, being an advancement in the rate these initiations took place between 1795 and 1798. This is fascinating stuff. So in the years prior to this push, secret societies were being formed and gathered into their ranks those that would play the major parts in the final events. Because the battle is for your mind. And what they can achieve in secret can have an impact on the whole of humanity. So what happened once these secret societies had been formed, and who formed them? In actual fact, these kings, the king of the north and the king of the south, were sitting at the table behind the scenes. Now, Napoleon and Freemasonry, they say it was never, there's no absolute proof, but they claim that obviously he was. And what did he do? Always by their fruits you must judge them. August 15, 1769, this comes from the Freemasonry webpage as well. Napoleon Bonaparte, in Corsica, trained in the military schools in Paris, was promoted to general after the siege of Toulon. He led the troops into most of Europe. And in 1798, Egypt. Isn't that beautiful? Returning to France, he was nominated first consul after the revolution of the 18th Brumaire. Napoleon founded the Bank of France. Now, I want you to take note of what is happening here. We're getting an entirely new political system in the world. One that moves the emphasis from the religious sphere to the secular sphere. And in the culminating years afterwards, secularism seems to rule and seems to have pushed the religious out of the way. And behind the scenes, things are happening. New structures are set in place, new organizations, new forms of government. And eventually, the tables are reversed, and the King of the North overruns these mindsets because they have induced in the minds of men a longing for something higher. Very fascinating possibility. He founded the Bank of France, reformed the tax system, restored the church, no more dominance of one group of churches over another, improved the education system, and in 1804 assumed the hereditary title of Emperor of the French. The following year, he was at war with Russia, Austria, and England. In April 1814, he was forced to abdicate and exiled to Elba. He attempted to regain his empire in 1815, was defeated at Waterloo, and banished to St. Helena, and died 6 years later. Now, here are some of his fruits. Napoleon appointed his brothers to Masonic office. This is their webpage, it's not conjecture. This is not a conspiracy. This is fact. Louis was named Deputy Grand Master in 1805. Jerome was Grand Master of the Grand Orient, Westphalia, the eldest. Joseph was made a Freemason at the Tuileries in April 1805 and appointed Grand Master of the Grand Orient of France. And Lucien was a member of the Grand Orient of France. And these were the ruling people of Europe. Now, if we go to the history books and we look at the International Napoleonic Society, we find something else that's very interesting. Napoleon and the Jews. Napoleon was the first leader in Europe to grant liberty, equality, and fraternity. And those same watchwords became the watchwords for another nation that would receive a gift from France, namely the Statue of Liberty, and would introduce those same systems of thinking and governance into its midst. And he gave this to all religions. And this lithograph here represents Napoleon granting liberty to the Jews. Napoleon's uncle, Cardinal Fish, also got involved. He told Napoleon, "Sire, so you wish to the end of the world to come with your laws to give the Jews equality like the Catholics? Do you not know that the Holy Scriptures predict that the end of the world will happen when the Jews will be recognized as a corporate nation?" Fascinating stuff. You see, up until that time, Protestantism had filled the world with the mindset that the papacy was the Antichrist. And now suddenly the Antichrist as a political entity disappears from the world scene and his power, his political power, is removed from their sight. Isn't he going to bring about the final events? He dives underground. He doesn't disappear as a church. He remains a woman. But secret societies spring up everywhere. And these secret societies are founded by the very people that now have disappeared. And then they forbid people from joining some of the societies, like Freemasonry. And then when the objectives have been achieved, they unban the society. The Jesuits had taught that the Antichrist was yet future, and that he would arise, and that he would intimidate the Jews, the church not being there anymore, but having been raptured. And all eyes, therefore, should await the coming of a Jewish kingdom so that the promised Antichrist could come. Now, the one who actually started this philosophy is Napoleon. At the time of the end, this philosophy, the secularization of the world, will push the king of the north out of the way. And then behind the scenes, things can happen. While to the minds of the people, they see something totally different. Here is a seed, a new philosophy being planted in the minds of men. There will be a Jewish state. The preparation for such a state must have been phenomenal. Just imagine. The Jewish people scattered throughout the entire world. Nothing but chaos here in the Middle East. And now a state is to be proclaimed. How are you going to achieve it that all the Jews that are ensconced in the various societies and normally quite affluent and good at what they are doing, how are you going to get them to budge and move there so that this can be fulfilled? That must take some effort. Not only that, if this happens and eventually a temple can be built there and a new philosophy, which is a Jesuit philosophy, of the Antichrist who will come, Alcazar, Ribera, futuristic Jesuit philosophies, well, then you have a new Antichrist as well, and the world can look at political events unfolding, and the question of where you stand with God doesn't come close to you. It's something that happens on the world arena and doesn't affect you. Here's a totally new theology. And it comes when? What is the date? 1798. A new philosophy. This is what the world believes today. So this has been very successful. And they all believe this today. This is not what the Bible taught. This is not what Protestantism taught. And in order to get people to believe this, you have to be prepared to dislocate millions of people and herd them to Palestine to create a nation that can fulfill the prophecy. But in order to do it, you must control all the powers that are role players in the game. Does that make sense? And that's where the secret societies come in, that were all set up during this time. Well, is this a reality? Are they really doing it? Yes, they are. You can look at the web pages. It's fascinating. The third temple, Gershon Salomon, chairman of the temple, Mount Faithful, the preeminent organization in Israel working for the rebuilding of the third temple, opined on the record saying that a Netanyahu government, do we have one now? We happen to have one. Would be good news for the prospect of the rebuilding of the temple. In previous political campaigns, Netanyahu incorporated into the platform of his Likud party that if he was elected prime minister, he would press for the opening of the Temple Mount for Jewish worship. And they claim that the Temple Mount Faithful have the cornerstone ready to lay. In addition, the Temple Institute now has all the furniture and priestly garments ready for the third temple. The priesthood and the Sanhedrin have been revived. We're ready. And the world cannot wait for this event. And once this happened, Christians will be raptured. There's no such thing in the Bible. I want to discuss a little bit of sensitive history. And if I go to sensitive history, well, then I must quote sources that say it rather than that I say it. This is a fascinating book, and the web pages are there. You can check it out. Facts are Facts. This is a book that was written by a Jewish man. And he confronted the thinking of many of the high-placed individuals of the world. This is interesting stuff. In this book, Benjamin H. Friedman, a Jewish man, writes about the Jews and reveals an interesting history. He states that the present Jews in Palestine are not the true descendants of the Judeans, but rather descendants of the Khazars. In the letter addressed to D. David Goldstein of Boston, Massachusetts, a convert to Catholicism, the author, Benjamin Friedman of New York City, dated October 1954, provides some fascinating insights. This is in the public domain. Let's study this for a while and see where we get. Benjamin H. Friedman claims that the word Jew was only introduced into the English language in the 18th century, and that Jesus referred to himself as a Judean and not as a Jew. Inscribed upon the cross when Jesus was crucified were the Latin words Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iudaeorum, which means Jesus of Nazareth, ruler of the Judeans. Now this is fascinating. I went and checked it, and it is so. Yes, it happens to be so. Now, the word Jew today has a religious as well as a political connotation. You think of a Jewish entity, a government, but you also think of their religion incorporated at the same time, whereas the term Judean is a geographic connotation. It's a geographic. It doesn't incorporate the religion. It's where he came from. He was from Judah. He was a Judean. He further writes, the form of religious worship known as Phariseeism in Judea in the time of Jesus was a religious practice based exclusively upon the Talmud. The Talmud in the time of Jesus was the Magna Carta, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all rolled into one of those who practiced Phariseeism. The Talmud today occupies the same relative position with respect to those who profess Judaism. So the rituals and rites that many of them observed were based on the Talmud and not on the Torah. Rabbi Morris, this is all from the source. Rabbi Morris N. Kurtzer wrote a most revealing and comprehensive article with the title, What is a Jew?, which was published as a feature article in Look magazine in June 17, 1952 issue. In that article, Rabbi Morris Kurtzer evaluated the significance of the Talmud to Judaism today. In that illuminating treatise and that important subject, by the most qualified authority at the time, Rabbi Morris N. Kurtzer stated, the Talmud consists of 63 books of legal, ethical, and historical writings of the ancient rabbis. It was edited 5 centuries after the birth of Jesus. It is a compendium of law and lore. It is the legal code which forms the basis of the Jewish religious law, and it is, note, the textbook used in the training of rabbis. So rabbis are trained according to the Talmud. And the Talmud has very little in common with the Bible. Then he states, from the birth of Jesus until this day, there have never been recorded more vicious and vile, libelous blasphemies of Jesus or Christians and the Christian faith by anyone, anywhere, or any time than you will find between the covers of the infamous 63 books, which are the legal code which forms the basis of the Jewish religious law as well as the textbook used in the training of rabbis. I don't want to go into it. If I were to put the quotes on the screen, which the Talmud contains about Jesus, you would be horrified. It is some of the vilest statements that I have ever had the dishonor of reading. And this is what their training consists of. He then proceeds to quote some of the most horrendous statements from the Talmud regarding ethical issues, and not only regarding ethical issues, which deal with many, many issues from economics to relations with women, etc., and of course, the view on Christ. As to the origin of the present Jews in Palestine, he states that those Jews derived from Eastern Europe, and many, many of the Jews that today live in the reconstituted state of Israel come from Eastern Europe, are not descendants of the Judeans or the lost tribes of Israel, but rather descendants of the Khazars. Who are they? They were a nation most people do not even know of. He writes, the so-called self-styled Jews in Eastern Europe in modern history cannot legitimately point to a single ancient ancestor who ever set even a foot on the soil of Palestine in the era of Bible history. Research also revealed that the so-called or self-styled Jews in Eastern Europe were never Semites, are not Semites now, nor can they ever be regarded as Semites at any future time by any stretch of the imagination. What secret mysterious power has been able for countless generations to keep the origin and the history of the Khazars and the Khazar kingdom out of the history textbooks? Did you ever learn about it at school? I never learned about it. And out of classroom courses in history throughout the world, the origin and the history of Khazars and the Khazar kingdom are certainly incontestable historical facts. You have to do some cross-checking. Even the Jewish encyclopedia is quite explicit about it. This was the Khazar kingdom. Here is the Black Sea, the Byzantine Empire. Here was Persia. And here was the kingdom of the Khazars. It was a massive kingdom. Now let's look at some of this interesting history. The Khazars were an Asiatic nation. And the Jewish encyclopedia states Persian origin that converted to Talmudic Judaism. Now obviously some of the rabbis involved there could have been Judeans and probably were Judean descendants. But their converts are not Judeans. And that had conquered a vast area of Eastern Europe, which was in turn later conquered by the Russians in the 10th and 13th century. So that is why there are so many Russian Jews. Have you ever thought where they came from? Did they escape from Palestine? Were they the lost 10 tribes? Did they emigrate to Russia? No. This is a totally different nation that accepted Talmudic Judaism. He writes, after a historic session with representatives of the three monotheistic religions, King Bulan, 7th century, decided against Christian and Islam, because Islam had just arisen, and selected as the future state religion the religious worship then known as Talmudism, and not known and practiced as Judaism, which was totally different, which was based on the Bible. They adopted the Hebrew alphabet, and the Khazars adapted words to...
If it was up to me, I would pretend that one missile came from Iran and shoot it down.
Shoot it down into the...
Millicent, oh, it's not me. I think that's how it was cut. Yo. If you don't understand what's going on, here's a summary. So I just took the last part. I left the Iran things out because we'll come back and talk about Iran in future. But the Talmud and not the Torah influences the Judaism that exists today. The Talmud has very little in common with the Bible, and yet it is the book that is used to train rabbis today. I lament, like, really, I lament history that has been discarded or tampered with. You know, because now what we're seeing is the Jews that we have today have their allegiance in what he said is what Talmudic Judaism, which is very different to the one that we find in the Bible / the Torah. We talk about these Abrahamic faiths and we cite Judaism and Christianity and Islam. And then when you listen to people, scholars who have done their work in that, or if you go and do your own work in it, then you realize we are more different than we are similar, even at the foundation. That's how much propaganda and tampering has been done. How scary is that? And hence the confusion, hence the deceptions, that we are under, the deceptions that are yet to come, because people don't know any better, because we are duped, and then we fight each other about what to believe and what not to believe, because no one really knows. That is scary.
Do you think the world is getting better or worse? Unsurprisingly, a huge majority of people today believe the world is getting worse. Maybe this global pessimism is the result of a culture bathed in bad news, or maybe we inherently know the earth-shaking truth presented at the heart of this book. Something is deeply wrong with our planet, and we are powerless to fix it. The Great Controversy not only unveils the origin of human degradation, but also discloses the titanic struggle raging below the din of pandemics and peril, corruption and carnage, murder and mayhem. In this astonishing work, you will discover that evil has a face, good has a champion, and sin has an end. If you want to prepare for the end of this world and the glorious world to come, you must read this book. Join the campaign to distribute millions of copies of The Great Controversy by Ellen G. White to people in and around your communities. Contact your local church for more information or text us at +27 73 470 3520. Adventist World Radio, SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.